sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl.
I'm joined on the show today by Andrew Craig, who's a lawyer and was a former journalist for the Hartford Courant. He's an author of two books, one that came out in the 80s called Spiked, and more recently, Presidential Puppetry. He currently lives in the belly of the beast, Washington, D.C., and has a very informative website, which is at www.justice-integrity.org, where you can find out more information about what we're going to be talking about today and a lot of other breaking news stories. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Oh, so good to talk to you again, Cheryl.
Yes. Is there anything you'd like to add that I may have left out?
Well, add one thing. Just today, as we're talking, the Washington Post quoted me in its story about the Mueller probe and the Roger Stone and other hearings, and cited website. I'd run into a reporter at a Roger Stone hearing. Roger Stone is from Connecticut, of course, as well as Paul Manafort. So we try to keep vigilant here on the news and talk to the reporters and talk to really everybody with a bit of a historical context.
Yeah, that's what I love about your website, is that you have all the latest up to date. You go to all these meetings because you're right there in Washington, and so it's very informative. So let me just get to what we're talking about today. You are part of a recently formed group called the Truth and Reconciliation Committee. Could you tell us what this group's mission is and more about it and who's on it and why it all matters?
Well, the mission is to bring truth and reconciliation to the country via understanding better the four major political assassinations of the 1960s. These were of President Kennedy, Malcolm X, of Robert Kennedy, and Martin Luther King. And in all four of those situations, significant evidence has come to light to either undermine the official story of the assassinations and or to show that there are some sinister political aspects to them that affect modern politics. And so in January, shortly before the Martin Luther King national holiday, about 60 of us announced a goal to urge Congress, persuade the public, to urge Congress to reinvestigate these four major assassinations. And the group that did this consists perhaps most notably of family members of all four of the victims of the assassinations, plus various expert medical doctors, scientists, lawyers, and authors, and researchers, and celebrities. And among the celebrities, I know you have a serious audience, but I'll just say that part of the news coverage of this noted that the celebrities included film stars like Alec Baldwin, Martin Sheen, and some others. So various people are coming together to try to understand our past, not to prosecute anybody, but just to understand it for a better understanding of what's going on today that we don't have as much time or ability to research, but may be equally mysterious in various ways.
And why do you think this is important? Why do you put a lot of your time and energy into this? Why would this matter?
Well, all over the world, including in the United States, we have current affairs that are extremely important to all of our lives, and yet we have only a partial view or partial understanding of what's really going on. So, for example, at the beginning of the show, I mentioned that I cover things like the Paul Manafort or Roger Stone criminal cases here in Washington. These are all part of the Robert Mueller special prosecutor's investigation of the Trump administration. And what the Washington Post published today in the interview quoting me is, I said, part of the public thinks that the Mueller investigation is the ultimate in good government against bad government and bad people. But another part of the public thinks that it's a coup d'etat. It's an attempt to overthrow the elected President Trump. And yet, Cheryl, realistically, we have only a partial view of what the FBI has been doing so far. We do see indictments, we do see these kinds of hearings, but a much fuller perspective of what might be forthcoming comes from a historical inquiry into what types of things the FBI has done in the past, not just in the 60s, but during the suppression of documents leading right up to the present concerning events in the 60s and elsewhere. So if we understand, for example, the most important of the 3,500 books about the JFK assassination, that provides important lessons for very, very current affairs that some of us are engaged in right now.
And I see that on your website, which is if people want to go to help out or sign the petition calling for this reinvestigation of these assassinations, the website is americantruthnow.org. And I see in there that this group of 60 of you are calling for Congress to oversee the release of all these documents to the JFK assassination that I think were supposed to be released by 2017 and haven't been.
Right. In 1992, both houses of Congress passed unanimously something referred to by its nickname, the JFK Records Act, and it set up a process, and basically all relevant records were supposed to be released by 2017 in the fall, with very narrow exceptions. And President Trump only released some of the remaining documents, and then he asked for a postponement until last spring. And then he released some more, but it was a very haphazard process that was clouded in mystery, just like the original Warren Report in 1964, which had no index. And so some of the documents that were released in 2017, 2018, had already been released with different redactions, and it was enormously confusing to reporters, and I was one, as well as to the regular public. And it added to the sense that no one will ever know what happened. Let's just go on with our lives and forget about it, more or less, except maybe on anniversaries. But that can't be the solution to something that is so important. The president was murdered in broad daylight, and the public was not told the facts, and a cover-up has existed until the present. And we can't take seriously discussions about law and order, the free press, transparency, democracy, unless there's a normal accounting, a normal news coverage. You mentioned earlier that I'd worked at the Hartford Courant. I worked there 14 years, doing everything from town coverage to feature articles, but most relevantly to this is I covered federal courts for 5 years. And so we would put enormous effort into researching a story and writing it. But I can tell you, Cheryl, that very few of us, and certainly not me, had any idea while we were covering bank robbery trials or all kinds of other matters that the four major assassinations were highly dubious what the official records were. And later in life here in Washington, I learned that, and I've talked to scores of relevant people involved. And the Warren Report, for example, just is not true. It's a cover-up job. It's partial truth. And the same thing is true about Martin Luther King and Robert Kennedy's death. In fact, just earlier this morning, I was on the phone with Dr. William Pepper, who is a friend of both of those individuals. And let me share what that friendship led to. He became convinced, so convinced, that their accused killers were innocent, that this friend of Martin Luther King and Robert Kennedy ended up as defense attorney for their accused killers, Sirhan Sirhan and James Earl Ray. And he was convinced, as a human rights advocate, as an attorney, as a friend of the slain people, that they were absolutely innocent, not just on technicalities, but they could not possibly have fired the bullets that killed his friends. And he's not alone. There are scientists who have signed these petitions who feel the same way. Now, I hasten to point out that Sirhan Sirhan did fire bullets in the Ambassador Hotel in 1968, and they were aimed towards Robert Kennedy, and one, in fact, hit a friend of Robert Kennedy, Paul Schrade, who was standing next to the senator who was running for president. But the fatal bullets came from the rear, according to the coroner's report, and very few people know that. The coroner, Dr. Thomas Noguchi, is still alive. He's in his 90s, and I'll just maybe end on this note, Cheryl, to say this is the type of evidence that the American public need to know to understand both why the four most important progressive leaders of the 1960s died, but also what the implications are today. It's not just an abstract interest in justice, an armchair exercise. But when you're talking about the progressive agenda, you're talking about the economic safety net. You're talking about jobs and opportunity and education and healthcare and everything that makes up for modern life, including tax cuts for the rich and lower refunds and higher taxes for everybody else.
Right. It was government for the people instead of what we have, government for corporations and the powerful right now.
As long as I'm doing this kind of checklist, I got to throw in one other aspect.
Sure.
War. I mean, we're on the verge of starting a new war down in Venezuela right now. And the whole U.S. aid to Venezuela is an obvious hoax. I mean, if we wanted to give aid to Venezuela, we wouldn't be starving the people with sanctions.
Right, right.
And so John Kennedy wanted to stop the Vietnam War. And Martin Luther King, his fatal mistake was advocating for the end of the Vietnam War 5 years later. And Robert Kennedy, the same thing in 1968. They wanted to stop the wars and focus on the American people. And some more convoluted story of how that led to their death, and I can do in a bullet point, but I just wanted to tee up the war aspect of this.
Now, and isn't Paul Schrade the guy who was with Robert Kennedy when he got shot? Isn't he one of the 60 signatories on your petition?
Yeah.
So even he says that Sirhan didn't do it.
Well, not only does he say it, but he's a passionate believer in Sirhan Sirhan's innocence. Sirhan Sirhan has been basically locked up since 1968, and Paul Schrade has gone to his parole hearing, and he can't get parole, even though he's been eligible for it since the mid to early 1980s. And he comes up every 5 years. Paul Schrade has been begging the board to free the man who shot Paul Schrade in the head, but he says he did not kill the senator. And they don't want to listen because, and by the way, just to get a little political here, one of the supposed progressive hopes for president is Kamala Harris. And the people involved in the RFK research community, many of them are very upset with her. In fact, Sirhan's attorney, Bill Pepper, who I mentioned, he said that she refused even to look at their filings when she was California Attorney General, because she was so interested in just sticking with the power structure, being a tough prosecutor, that the idea that an innocent man is being held doesn't seem to make a difference to her or her staff. And the fact that the victim is one of the great progressive leaders of the last century should make a difference to voters, even if it doesn't make a difference to her.
Right. I'm not thrilled with her either. I know what you mean. Yeah, and what are the odds of these four progressive leaders all being killed off by supposedly independent lone gunmen in this, like, I don't know, what was it, like a 6 or 8 year time frame? What are the odds of that?
Well, exactly. And by the way, in three of the cases, excluding Malcolm X, there's a very clear pattern of a patsy, a fall guy, someone who was inveigled to be in the wrong spot at the wrong time. And that's when, according to many of us in the research community, the professional killers moved into action once the patsy was in the vicinity of the target. So in the instance of President Kennedy, two of the signatories of this petition were doctors at the hospital who tried to revive President Kennedy, who was dead by the time he arrived, but they still gave it a heroic shot. Now, these are doctors who saw the wounds, and to not beat around the bush, the overwhelming evidence is that the fatal shot came from the right front. And if Lee Harvey Oswald, the convicted, not convicted, but accused killer, was in the rear, how do you have a bullet from the right front?
Yeah, that's always been an interesting question. So there's so many anomalies in all of these assassinations. And I know maybe you can speak to the William Pepper, who you were just talking about, attorney William Pepper, has written a book called The Plot to Kill King, where he outlines all of his research that he's done for 30 years and also the trial that took place in 1999, I think it was, that proved that James Earl Ray didn't do it and who actually did do it. And I don't know if you want to add anything to that.
Well, I'll just add that this was at the request of the King family. So they had asked him to look into his friend's death. And Dr. Pepper was very close to Martin Luther King. In fact, they were working together on a presidential run for Dr. King in 1968 when the assassination occurred. And he, like most people, simply assumed that James Earl Ray did it. Ray started to confess, and then he backed off, but by then he had already confessed in police custody, and he spent the rest of his life dying in 1998 trying to get a new trial. But the family persisted, and they thought he was on the right track, this accused killer of their head of their family. So Bill Pepper went at great risk to his life, actually, into the Memphis area, the rural regions around it, Mississippi and Louisiana. And in talking, not just as a lawyer, but as a journalist, a very gutsy investigative journalist, which he originally was, he talked in kind of Klan, racist, mafia circles to people who might know the origin of the death plot. And he wove the story together in a trial, a civil trial in Memphis in 1999, and a jury basically found a verdict against a different person than James Earl Ray, who was dead by then. And that was a symbolic effort. The family was not looking to enrich itself, so they were not asking significant damages. I think it was just $100 damages, but they wanted to show the world what the truth was. Now, unfortunately, our media has, of which I was part, and I'm still a part, but this is a very difficult story for reporters because, okay, you've got a jury verdict, but people don't have time to read the testimony, follow it. There doesn't seem to be national media clamoring about it. And so you have, in all of these cases, breakthrough evidence that's essentially ignored, or maybe one or two little stories so that people say they've covered it, but there's no penetration to the public consciousness.
Yeah, that's very amazing to me. I always think on Martin Luther King when in January when we celebrate his birth that nobody's talking about this, and it's just mind-boggling to me. I want to scream.
I looked into that. I thought that was amazing, too. And so when I first got to know these books and evidence and so forth, I first started on the most famous of these to compile reader's guides separately of the major books, the major movies, documentaries, especially, the major conferences, libraries. And I have those on the Justice Integrity Project site. If people go and look for a reader's guide, they'll find an overall compilation of the major books, whatever the theory of the case might be on these assassinations. But then I took another step, and I thought, well, there's always, kind of black studies departments at universities and, new generations of students and professors who study this. Let me reach out to some of them and see not only that I could promote their books on this site in whatever modest way the readership might bring, but just kind of cross-pollinate the research community and the professors and students. And here's an unfortunate, in my view, but not surprising conclusion. People need to make a living, and you're not going to get too far, despite what people might think, about focusing on who really killed Martin Luther King.
Right.
The money is in books and academic articles to talk about his legacy. The same thing with the Kennedys. Everybody wants to talk about the legacy.
Right, but Andrew, don't you think that that's controlled at some level where people who own these corporate media outlets are, there's a conspiracy, I believe, going on to silence this information?
Well, yeah, but in many ways it's unthinking because I'm still a part of the media in many ways. Of some 50 years after I started at the Record Current in 1970. And for both reporters, editors, and on up, it's not necessarily that they got the memo that they have to stifle with. It just makes people uncomfortable. And just like the antelope on the African plain never read a memo to stay away from the tigers, they just know that being around the tigers is a bad idea.
So
if you're an academic trying to get tenure or get a book contract, or you're a reporter trying to make your deadlines, the overwhelming sense is you just get a sense that this is not good for your future.
Right. So there's a lot of self-censorship going on.
That's the huge part of it.
Yeah.
And if it does work it up to the higher levels, somebody will say, well, I don't think it's new. It happened a long time ago. And by the way, I was just at a gathering of minority journalists, and it was a social reception, and I raised some of this, and people would look at me like, I wasn't even born then, or that was a long time ago. And they hadn't got a memo, but they just knew that talking about who really killed Martin Luther King, as opposed to what his legacy was and how we can do stories about that, it's two different things.
And just for the listeners, probably most of them know this by now, but the assassination of Martin Luther King was actually a real conspiracy. So when people want to say, oh, you're crazy conspiracy theorists, well, that was a real conspiracy. And I don't know if you want to add anything to that.
Well, I'd love to add something to it. First of all, the term conspiracy theory was popularized by the CIA in the 1960s, and it specifically was meant to denigrate anyone who criticized the Warren Report that came out in 1964 that blamed the entire Kennedy assassination on Lee Harvey Oswald. And by the late 1960s, New Orleans District Attorney Jim Garrison had virtually cracked the case to find that it was a conspiracy. And he was doing a grand jury. He's the last really courageous prosecutor in American history on this. So in 1967, particularly, there was a memo in April that you can now read because it was declassified. And it was from the CIA, and it instructed its operatives to get every one of their assets in the journalism community and academia to call people who criticize the JFK assassination conspiracy theorists who are so nuts that they shouldn't have a job in journalism or universities. And that term has continued to be an insult and a smear used against people like me or other researchers. without any attempt to evaluate evidence.
It's been very effective in meeting their goals of silencing people on that.
Well, and the odd thing is, I've been a lawyer now for 30 years with degrees from Yale and the University of Chicago Law School, and covering courts and just reading a newspaper, and you see that the term conspiracy is actually perhaps the most common federal charge there is. They're constantly accusing these right. defendants of conspiracy.
So they really do exist, yes.
They actually do exist. It just means two people getting together. And in the case of all four of these, it's definitely conspiracy. For one thing, it's a conspiracy to cover up the actual evidence. I mean, let me just give a quick example from the JFK case that people know a lot about. But very few people know that Oswald, the accused shooter, worked on the U-2 spy program while he was in the Marines. And that after he returned from the Soviet Union, he was clearly some kind of agent because he was working on super sensitive classified programs like air photo interpretation during a Cuban Missile Crisis for 6 months. And he was obviously some kind of undercover government agent. Mm-hmm. That's clear. And so that doesn't mean he did or did not fire bullets at the time. It just means that we haven't been told officially the full facts, and we need to get the government to be transparent on this as a step to be transparent on other things that are more recent.
Yeah, and your website for this petition to the Congress is called, again, it's AmericanTruthNow.org. And people can go on there and actually sign this petition demanding these reopenings of these assassination investigations. How else can they help out, Andrew?
Later there will be a donation page, but for the real activists, probably one of the main things is to be the media ourselves. That's what I encourage. And to encourage local outlets, support shows like yours, Cheryl, to cover these kinds of stories, and to ask for meetings with elected representatives to be visible. I'm a big advocate of people who have a group, getting the group to vote to take an interest in something like this, and then arranging a meeting in your district offices with the staff of your local member of Congress, and just
pressure them to look into
what
this.
You, yeah. What you want, and have them bring it to the attention of the member of Congress.
Mm-hmm.
One thing is you have to have these discussions with officials be a two-way street. You can't just have your own pet issue and ignore their concerns. To have a truly effective advocacy, you've got to realize where they're coming from.
Well, Andrew, I really applaud your work, and thank you for being part of that and for being on the show today. And I want to know if you can quickly, for the JFK assassination, what's the best book someone could read to get up to speed on that?
I think a lot of people, myself included, think that the single best book is by James Douglas. It was published in 2009. It's called JFK and the Unspeakable, Why He Died and Why It Matters, by James W. Douglas, who incidentally is one of the signatories on this group and is otherwise a leader. And it basically says that he was going to end the Vietnam War, and the power structure could not tolerate that.
And then for Martin Luther King?
I would say one of the Bill Pepper books. His most recent is The Plot to Kill King.
Yeah, and then for Robert F. Kennedy's assassination?
Oh, now you're getting me in trouble because several people have just published new books on that. So I'm not going to make a total recommendation.
You can just give us a few titles then, yeah.
But, okay, I got about 20 here, but I'll read two that I think are particularly good. Assassination of Robert F. Kennedy by Tim Tate and Brad Johnson. Who Killed Bobby by Shane O'Sullivan. And a new one that just came out is A Lie Too Big to Fail by Lisa Pease.
And then for Malcolm X?
I have right here in my hand The Judas Factor, The Plot to Kill Malcolm X by former Washington Post reporter Carl Evans.
Okay. Wonderful. And again, your website is
justice-integrity.org. And what a pleasure to talk with you and your audience and make me think of my happy years in Central Connecticut.
And again, you were just listening to journalist and attorney Andrew Craig. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.